Today's
the 6th, right?
Today is the 6th.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I'll no problem.
Thanks. It's May 6th, 2017. This is Lee Hertel, H-E-R-T-E-L. I'm 51 years old, gay male, living with HIV for nearly 30 years. Diagnosed HIV positive in 1987 at the age of 22, still alive. I'm a dinosaur. Everyone else is dead of my generation, which is not an overstatement or an exaggeration or hyperbole, period. Let's get down and going. How did I become involved in harm reduction in Minnesota? By a service user at first, shooting crystal meth, which I started doing in 2004, I believe, and getting needles from Access Works over on 15th Street when they were still open. So I did that for years, and then after being homeless for a few years and finding housing, then I was going to Crystal Clear Tuesdays at Minnesota AIDS Project for gay men who used crystal meth. And then Adam Fairbanks of Minnesota AIDS Project asked me if I would volunteer with him in their syringe exchange. I did that. And then an opportunity came along to apply to the Minnesota HIV Services Planning Council to serve on the council and help people with HIV by helping determine where the resources from the state should go each year, which was done through surveying HIV-positive people in the state and gathering their opinion as to which was more important. For instance, drug access, help with co-pays, testing, et cetera, but as the epidemic changed and shifted, priorities became different as people lived longer. For instance, adult daycare was a big thing back in the early days, as well as childcare, and when people started living longer and not dying as fast, those priorities became less, and other things became higher priorities, like paying for very expensive antiretrovirals. After that, I met Sue Purchase, finally, on the planning council, or as an interview. No, I met her for an interview for the Community Cooperative Council on HIV and AIDS Prevention, which I was asked to join as the injection drug user representative. And that is a CDC mandated body that every state in the union must have and submit to the CDC every few years as to their plans to combat the epidemic of HIV in their area. So I joined that, and I met Sue Purchase then, and she asked me if I'd join Morpheus Project, which was her continuation of Access Works. I did that. Then after a while, I stopped that, and I picked up a lot of new clients when I was working with Morpheus Project and doing that for Sue. And after I quit, it just seemed inconceivable and incredibly uncaring to let these people just drop through the cracks once again. So I decided, what the hell? I have nothing to lose and only to gain. So I began my own syringe exchange program in 2012, in July of 2012, called Lee's Rig Hub. I am street-based. I run it out of my apartment in downtown Minneapolis. Work primarily on the streets, in drug houses, with drug suppliers, anywhere. There are people who need syringes. My primary demographic is homeless youth and precariously housed youth. But actually, the ages that I deal with run from 16 or 17 year old all the way to probably 60 or 70 year old. Many of them are heroin users. Many of them are heroin and methamphetamine users, which makes for a goofball, and some are just meth users, such as me. Primarily my clients, my participants, I use the word participant to avoid any sense of a hierarchy, but primarily my participants are heterosexual young people, or maybe sexuality questioning people, young people. And as far as harm reduction and what it means to me, it's not just the physical, tangible. It's so much more than just the syringe. It's everything you can't see. It's everything intangible. It's everything that makes people walk taller and straighter and maybe just a little bit cockier. And that would be the respect that I afford everybody, the dignity, the trust, the love, the belief, and a total non-judgmental attitude. And that, I think, is as equally important as the actual physical prevention of the transmission of disease, HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, any other bloodborne virus, hep A, hep D, you name it. That's all equally important. But I think that the actual respect in how you approach someone and how you deal with someone, how you relate to them, is going to inflect so strongly on their attitude for keeping themselves safe. Because when you feel like you have somebody who loves you, who cares about you, you're going to treat yourself better. And that's what I try to instill. I also do everything I can to instill a sense of pride in participants and let them know that they matter and what they do matters. Because it is a sad, sad day when people are saving lives and they're not getting the respect for it, especially when some of my participants are in their mid-20s and they've saved more lives than years they've been alive. That means they've also saved more lives than most physicians of any specialty, of any area in the hospital where they practice. So think about that. I've got a 26-year-old person who saved 30 lives with naloxone, and they're treated like crap. Most doctors would be lucky if they saved half that many number of people. The one thing, way back when we started doing this, totally underground, I had a participant who was arrested and jailed for saving someone's life because she did not respond to the Narcan fast enough, and they called 911. As soon as they did that, of course, the person woke up. It was too late to cancel the ambulance. So I get a call from the cops saying, I'm over here at such and such place, and they've got this drug called Naloxone. And said, they got it from you. And you just hand this out? And I said, yeah. But then I thought that was the end of it, right? No, 3 hours later, I get a call from this person's girlfriend, hysterical in tears, saying, they arrested me. They took him away. You didn't tell me it was illegal. This kid spent 4 days locked up in jail for saving someone's life. He was locked up without access to his segments, without anything. It was dropped because the city attorney, somebody took it to the city attorney, and the city attorney said, are you fucking nuts? I ain't touching that shit. But there's never an apology or anything to this young person. And that just makes me angry. I try to instill respect in my people. And that's all I'm going to do. That's all I'm about. It's never about me. It's always about them and what they've done. And for them to be treated so badly and so piss poorly for what they've done, the service to this to their friends and to their community, really makes me angry. When they don't get recognition for what they've done and what they've accomplished, that pisses me off. If you're not, I don't know if you're aware or not, but the OD rate in 2014 dropped by 23%. I didn't get any damn credit. That was us. Since 2014 until now, I have probably distributed more than 30 or 40 liters. That's liters of naloxone. That is 15 to 20 large 2-liter soda bottles of naloxone to people who use drugs around the state. Bye, Julie.
Fine. I'll see
ya. I love you. I love you. Give me a call. I'm still kicking ass.
Okay.
Bye, baby. Good to see you. Sorry about that interruption. Where was I? Oh, I was bitching. That's right. When they don't get that recognition. Because it was physically impossible for the Steve Rumler Memorial Hope Foundation to have affected the overdose death rate by that much, because Steve's law and our 911 Good Samaritan law was not signed or become active until the 1st of July in 2014, so it's impossible for them to do that much work in 6 months. It was Lee's Rig Hub and its participants. We pushed Narcan like a motherfucker. We're drug pushers, you're damn right. That's the drug we push. I have suppliers. I was working with 3 or 4 major heroin suppliers. And just like the white coats behind the pharmacy counter should be doing, are the white coats in the doctor's offices with this prescription pad should be doing. Every time they sold an opiate, they asked people how their Narcan supply was and if they needed some, in addition to providing thousands of syringes. I had people who were moving 2,000 syringes for me every 2 weeks, and liters of naloxone. And that's how you bring down an overdose death rate in the midst of an epidemic. You do it by flooding an area the size of the Twin Cities metro area, which is more than 3,000 square miles. 7 counties, 2 states, and over 1,000 communities. You do it by flooding that area. You do not affect an overdose death rate with the skimpy 2 cc's per person per week only on a Friday. That's bullshit. That's just asking for death. What's changed since I began this work? There's this great call for 911 Good Samaritan laws, so people would call and report an overdose rather than, you know, just letting people die or calling 911, sticking the person out on the curb, waiting until they heard sirens and then yelling, "Overdose!" and run the fuck away as fast as they could. And that was a good thing, but now that good work all around the country is beginning to be undermined as the epidemic becomes worse and worse and people become more and more scared. They're having these stupid laws that are counterintuitive to the 911 Good Samaritan law. In some places in Ohio, they want to charge people with inciting a panic after they've been brought back from an overdose, or mandatory treatment for 30 days, involuntarily locked up. And that isn't going to do anything. All the hard work that's been accomplished, everything that's been accomplished in the past 4 years is in danger if that happens, and it must not happen. And what pisses me off the most is that there's never any discussion in the U.S. about diacetylmorphine, which is legal pharmaceutical heroin. It's used in many other countries in Europe, all over the world. It's pharmaceutical heroin, so every time people shoot up, they know exactly how much they're getting, and it's clean, and it's pure, and it's as clear as water. It's not this dirty, crappy stuff that looks like tea. It's clean, and it's pure, but they won't do that. Another powerful thing is ibogaine for the treatment of addiction. It's derived from the root of a bark of a tree in Central Africa, the Bwana tribe. There are great documentaries, one especially by a man named Dimitri, called I'm Dangerous with Love. He's a man who's been arrested for doing ibogaine treatments underground in the U.S., which another thing is bullshit, because ibogaine works. I know somebody who went through it. Swears to God it works, and I believe him. Many other people have said that. They don't have the need, the Jones, the dope sickness for heroin. But we don't discuss that here. We just go on with the same old thing. We go on with the jail and bail, jail and bail, jail and bail, jail and bail. Put him in treatment, let him out, put him in treatment, let him out, put him in treatment, let him out. The only thing our current drug policy does in this country is enrich insurance companies, treatment centers, and pharmaceutical companies and methadone clinics. That's it. It's not about the people at all. If it were, we wouldn't have such high recidivism rates when it comes to treatment. Also, the people who need to be acknowledged are the people who are saving lives every day, the people who use drugs, the people who inject drugs. I think it's pathetic that in 2014, the OD death rate dropped 23% and none of my people got any recognition ever. In 2015, it went up just slightly, maybe 1 or 2 deaths. In 2016, it skyrocketed and increased by 40% from 110 in 2015 to 153, I believe the number was, in 2016 for Hennepin County. I took 2016 off because I was going very hard and very fast and intensely with Lee's Rig Hub, and I needed a break to avoid burning out. And so what happens? The death rate goes up.
Right.
The death rate goes up more than 40%. And I don't blame myself for that. I know I'm not responsible, but I see the cause and the effect, and the effect of not flooding areas and people who can get the Narcan out there. Not flooding an area with Narcan and getting it into the hands of people who use it the most and who can like utilize it the most, and that would be people who use drugs and people who inject drugs. And I think it's a damning indictment of the treatment industry, of methadone clinics, of the other harm reduction services, and the fixed site needle exchanges, that they fail so miserably to engage people who use drugs that an OD rate can shoot up more than 40% in 1 year because one person takes a year off. That's absurd. If you want clarification, call me back. If you want to talk any more about this, I'm happy to talk. That's it. They're very dogmatic.
Okay.
Don't vary. Don't vary from me. Here you go. There you go.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Was that fun?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You just gave us a monologue right there.
Yeah.